Greetings, travelers. Welcome back to Tales from the Enchanted Forest with your hosts, Fox and Sparrow.
Happy St. Patty's Day, or at this time it'll be a week or two ahead of St. Patty's Day, but based on when our episodes go up, this is our St. Patty's episode, so happy St. Patrick's Day. For the past 2 years now, I have been picking some Celtic stories, and that trend continues today, so I'm quite excited that we get another addition to our St. Patrick's Day collection.
We will be putting up a blog post on this. There should be one up about the lovers by the time this podcast goes up as well. But we have been a bit sick all of 2024 so far, so things are a little bit slower here in the Enchanted Forest.
Yes, we're taking it easy. We're taking it chill. We're just taking care of ourselves as we kind of recuperate and kind of get better. I know we had spoke that 2024 we weren't going to be sick. And then I guess sickness laughed at us and was like, challenge accepted. And we didn't really make it one day into the year. I think we were both sick at the beginning.
Yeah, 2024 is just not it. I thought, I was like, you know what, we're going to start 2024. Positive note, no sickness, just motivated, trying new things. And to be fair, I have done a lot of that, but I've also been really sick the entire time. So whatever virus everyone's carrying, please give it a break.
It's just been a part of my life that I've always like gotten whatever's going around, but I'm getting real tired of it. It's like, okay, have I not collected all the sicknesses yet? Can we just like back off just a smidge?
And the thing is, we don't even have kids. It's just like by proxy of children that we're getting sick. So I can't imagine parents who have sick children on rotation constantly.
Right?
Can't do it. Couldn't be me.
My sister's also a teacher. So she's got like exponentially more. She's just always getting sick. And it's, I don't know how she actually functions as a human being. Because like, we have kids that she's always interacting with and then getting sick and then having to kind of march on. It's just like, dang. I don't know. Teachers are heroes.
Yeah. I mean, it's very clear now that the things we are not into currently are children who make us sick and sicknesses. But some things we are into, because, you know, even though you're sick, you still have to do things. Do you have anything you are very into currently, Sparrow?
Right now, I am currently rewatching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I feel like in the past like 12 months or whatever, I've just been slowly going back and rewatching a bunch of my favorite shows. So I started like with The Office, I did Parks and Rec, and now I'm at Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And I've kind of forgotten how good Brooklyn Nine-Nine was because like I had more nostalgia for Parks and Rec. That was my first big sitcom of that like Michael Shore type shows.
Mm-hmm.
So I had so much nostalgia for that, but Brooklyn Nine-Nine is very good and it holds up. I think it holds up well. Obviously, you can talk about like, you know, the way we view policing these days is different, but like that show itself is solid with a wonderful cast of characters. Yeah. So I've just been enjoying those cozy feels as we've been sick on and off. Just need those comfort shows.
You know what's actually very ironic is that I was also going to talk about sitcoms.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, because I've been doing a lot of things. I've been doing a lot of crafts recently.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I do crafts, I either listen to an audiobook or I put on a sitcom. And I didn't really watch any of these sitcoms as they were airing. I only started watching The Office during the first COVID lockdown while I was playing Legend of Zelda. I only really watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine recently with my husband's family because they were super into it. And, you know, at first I really personally thought that I wouldn't like these kind of long series because I've never really watched them. But I really did miss a lot of masterpieces. So I watched The Office and I loved that. We watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine and I was super into it. And then I've also done How I Met Your Mother. So I only really watched that after. So I basically all of these shows I've only watched after the hype has gone down and they've finished. So I recently did New Girl, so I finished watching that.
Oh yeah, I have not gotten through that one.
Well, I started it, I think, around the same time as we were doing Brooklyn Nine-Nine, again, during COVID. And mm-hmm. so, because there was like a crossover episode at one point, and I thought, hey, this is, you know, Zooey Deschanel, sounds like a really cool character. It sounds like that show is also quite nice. So I started watching that, but then I did kind of fall off, I think around season 3 or 4, just because I found it to be a little bit too repetitive. And that's why I'm not traditionally a fan of sitcoms, is because I don't like miscommunication as a trope. I don't like when they do the same mistakes or make the same mistakes over and over and over again. There's only so many times I can see Ross and Rachel break up before I'm like, I cannot stand Ross anymore. But currently, I am doing Modern Family.
Oh, I love that one.
And because I see, the thing is, because of the way my Instagram algorithm is, once I see a clip of something and maybe I watch it for too long, or like I watch 2 in a row, it's everywhere. So I start seeing lots of clips of Modern Family. And so obviously I'd watch them because they're quite funny, you know, sound bites and stuff. But I started seeing it everywhere. And at a certain point, I was like, maybe I should watch the whole thing. And that's kind of, and I know people will get upset because people that I tell in real life get upset when I say this. I never really watched all of Game of Thrones.
Don't worry, I'm not upset.
Well, it got to the point where I'd seen so many spoilers, so many clips of it, so many like compilations and stuff everywhere on YouTube, on Facebook, on Instagram, that at a certain point I was like, okay, I know the story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really want to watch the whole series until I know it's going to end well and stuff. But then I did watch season 7 and I really liked all of it. So I was like, you know what? I might as well watch the final season with everybody because everyone in my life was super into it. And so that was a mistake because season 8 sucked. But I, at some point, will have to go back and watch the entire thing. But we'll see when that happens. So yeah, I'm very, very into all of these at the moment. They hold up really well. They're really funny. And I think something like Modern Family, maybe it's because it's still quite modern, and so it's not very old yet, but I think it still lands fairly well. Because when I watch Friends, a lot of the jokes don't land anymore, and that's making me really sad. Because I'm just like, That's a bit weird. Why did Ross just act like a complete misogynist right there? And so it takes the fun out of it when you start to like recognize those things. But in things like Modern Family and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I think they lean into the jokes a lot. And so it's a lot easier just to kind of enjoy them without being too critical.
Yeah. And at least for something like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and I feel like Modern Family did this well too, it was very good at having those incremental character developments so that, mm-hmm. like, by the end of the series, their characters were fairly different from where they started off, or at least they had, like, learned a lot going on. They weren't the same as when they first started.
Oh, Modern Family is breaking my heart because they're so old now. I think I'm on season 8.
Oh, yeah, that's such a weird feeling.
And they started off as babies.
I know, you look back, like, I always think of, like, the first episode with Manny and then the final episode. Like, Manny in particular stands out to me for some reason, being like, oh my gosh, dude, you grew up so much.
For me, it's Luke.
Oh, Luke was also such a baby.
Like, his voice changed. He's taller. He's making jokes about, you know, going off to, like, he actually is going off to college, I think, in the season I am. I'm in. Well, not going off to college. I think he's looking at his college applications and stuff. But it's so weird because in my head, I'm like a week ago, you were a child because I'm binge watching, obviously. So
right.
When you binge watch, I think you can get through so much so quick. And just having it on in the background is like speeding my way through it. But it's so sad because he was a child and now he's an adult. And it's breaking my heart because I'm like, you were a baby.
Oh,
but it's okay. I mean, he's not my child. But they grow up so fast.
Yeah, kids grow up way too quickly, but this story, it will grow on you. So let's move on to today's fairy tale. So like I said before, in honor of St. Patrick's Day, I've picked a Celtic tale for us. And this story in particular comes from the book Legendary Fictions of the Irish Celts, first published in 1891. The author, Patrick Kennedy, was an Irish folklorist, and he was motivated to collect these stories because he feared that the tales he heard as a child were being lost. And what better way to preserve stories than by writing them down in a collection?
So some of you might be a little bit more familiar with the Kildare Pooka from W.B. Yeats's Fairy and Folktales of the Irish Peasantry. And it's the same kind of story, but just his version of it. So this isn't just, you know, a small town little thing that comes from Kildare, but it's also a kind of well-known story, I think, in some parts of the world. I remember that we talked about it a little bit in school, but it wasn't specifically this tale. It was just the idea of fairies and different kind of creatures not being the typical, whimsical, beautiful things that we think of them, but, you know, the kind that will bury your children or take them into a bog or drown them for fun.
Just for kicks.
Just for kicks. I mean, I think I personally like those types of fairies more. The kinds that will just do unexpected things just for the sake of it. And the ones that clean your houses.
These are her favorite.
Yeah, the tricksters and the cleaning ones.
All these fairy stories always just have some weird twist or something that makes your head tilt. So I always just enjoy in time we get a fairy type story.
Yeah, I mean, I really like it when we have stories that kind of subvert the expectations of what it's supposed to be. And you see that a lot, I think, with some of the stories from the Brothers Grimm, where people know a well-known version of it. And so when you read the real story or kind of like where the source of the story comes from, then it's a little bit different. So it gives you that shock value. And I think with fairies, when people think of fairies, obviously you think of the very, you know, Tinkerbell, the kind of Mermaidia, Fairytopia type of fairies. But under it all, you know, we had changelings and we had fairy circles and all the danger that came with it. So I like that we sometimes go back to the roots and be like, not everything is as nice and proper as it seems.
So with that, dear travelers, gather close, be wary of the little fairies that might be about as we tell the tale of the Kildare Pooka. Our story begins in a manor in the county of Kildare. As grand of a manor as it was, the owner was rarely home to enjoy it, as he often traveled abroad for his business. While the staff worked very hard to keep the manor tidy when the master was home, they didn't always have the same drive when he was away. In those instances, some areas of the manor became neglected. Now, this is a very relatable mood for me. I enjoy a clean home, but I find if I don't have friends or family coming over, I kind of push off some areas of cleaning for more than I probably should. But when I read this, Fox, I thought of you and how you like everything to be clean. So how do you feel about this servant's behavior here?
I mean, come on, this is the perfect time to deep clean those like little crevices and the areas that don't get, you know, touched. Although, you know, if I was a servant in this household, I would have a monthly kind of like cleaning list and I would go through it. And so when the master was there, it would be, you know, all of the high traffic areas that get touched up, all the visible stuff. But when he wasn't there, oh, that would be the time to do the linens and make sure, you know, the chandeliers get swept and dusted and everything. I said swept, but, you know, get cleaned and, yeah, you know, the flagstones get polished and wiped. I would love, you know, I think obviously not in terms of pay or anything like that, but to be in charge of a manor house and be in charge mm-hmm. of like the restoration and the cleaning and stuff like that would be fantastic. Obviously, I don't think I could do it as a servant or as a like just a cleaner. But restoring it and making it shine and taking it from, you know, kind of dusty and grim to something beautiful. Oh, it's a dream.
I was going to say, like, in another time, in another life, I can see you absolutely nailing being, like, head maid or, like keeper of the house, housekeeper, or whatever, being like, okay, I've got this huge manor and we got to get this spotless and we got to have an organized schedule. Like, you would just kill it in that role.
Listen, if you have time to lean, you have time to clean.
Exactly. Anyways, I just felt you in reading this story. I'm like, oh, Fox, would have some words with these servants.
As soon as I read this part of the story, though, all I could think about was Studio Ghibli and how they always have a cleaning montage. And I just, in my head, imagined one, like, right before they get a letter where the master was coming home. They're all panicking. And then they have, like, the cleaning montage. And then by the time the master gets there, they're all just kind of standing there, ready to welcome him. But yes, I think this is a wasted opportunity.
They were just wanting the montage, man. But there was one area of the manor that rebelled against being left in such a state of chaos, and that was the kitchen. Late at night, servants often heard unnerving sounds of movement, fire pokers clattering, and the banging of dishware. These experiences continued, and the staff's fear of what was happening grew to the point that none would enter the kitchen after the evening fire went out. One merry evening, all the servants stayed up a bit later than usual. They all gathered around the kitchen fire, exchanging stories of fairies, ghosts, and the like. They talked so long that the little scullery boy curled up in the hearth and fell asleep. And he remained sound asleep even as the others trailed off to their beds. Eventually, the boy woke to the sound of the kitchen door opening. Startled and sudden fear taking hold, he tentatively peeked out from the hearth to see a donkey walking towards the dormant fire. Relieved that it was only a donkey, the boy moved to leave his hiding spot and return the animal to the barn. But his relief was immediately washed away as he heard the donkey say, "I may as well begin first at last." The boy became white as a sheet, and his teeth began to chatter as he realized that this was no ordinary donkey, but a puka. The boy thought of all the stories of ghosts and fairies he had heard only a short while ago, and thought that if this was a puka, it would surely eat him. Luckily for the boy, the puka seemed to have other things to do. First, the puka started the kitchen fire, and then brought a big pot to the pump to fill it with water. Next, it moved the pot to the fire and began to boil the water. While it waited, the puka laid down next to the fire and was very close to seeing the boy in his hiding place. The boy held his breath, afraid that the creature had noticed him. But the puka did not acknowledge the boy, and once the water boiled, it stood up and got to work. Every plate, bowl, cup, and piece of cutlery was thrown into the pot and meticulously cleaned. All the dishware was then dried and placed back on the shelves in their proper places. Next, it grabbed the broom and swept away all the dirt. Lastly, it turned to rake up the fire before leaving as nonchalantly as it had appeared. But my big question here is, and I know this, like, puka is like a mysterious fairy creature, but like, how is the donkey puka cleaning with its hooves? Like, I don't understand how it's getting the grip to do a good wash, and I'm kind of afraid that things are being scratched.
Okay, I don't know if this is too niche. Have you heard of mop booties?
No.
They're like little boots. Like, they're like, I guess, like, they're just really big socks, but you put them on when you're cleaning, and so when you are mopping, they help so that you don't leave like marks and stuff on the ground as you clean, but they also help like kind of mop it up. So I assume it's just some kind of thing he can attach to his hooves. And so like you can slip over his hooves. You know how dogs have rain boots? Kind of like that is what I imagined.
Oh yeah, the little rain booties. Oh my goodness. That's adorable now.
Also, when I read the story, because after you put it up, because I read it up and then I did a little bit of research. And as I was reading the story, I was like, oh, this reminds me of Puck from Shakespeare. And I was just like, look at this original thought I just had. I'm so excited to share it. And then when I was reading the W.B. Yeats version, he talks about it. And I was like, oh, ah, it's not an original thought. Someone else thought, ah, an animal spirit that's, you know, kind of a trickster, kind of a weird creature. Called the puka, you know, it's a bit too on the nose for Shakespeare to have a kind of trickster donkey called Puck. So, non-original thought. Shakespeare had a first.
For someone who is uncultured like myself, Puck is from what Shakespeare play?
I think a lot of schools actually do this one. It's the Midsummer's Night Dream, and it's a comedy.
Mm.
It's the one where everyone falls asleep and they switch bodies and they switch who they... Not bodies, sorry.
They switch bodies?
No, that's wrong. So it's the one where they all kind of take these different types of, I guess, magic. They got magic. There are magic spells. I can't remember if there is any enchantments, but they change who they love.
Oh.
In a way, so they all fall in love with the wrong person. And Puck is kind of like the fairy or jester, and he's one of the main characters that does kind of the tricks. And what I do remember, and I will look this up after to make sure this is right, I remember he turned someone's head into that of a donkey, of an ass.
Okay.
And just looking it up now, so Puck is based on the mythology of the Pooka, of Celtic mythology. So.
Okay.
So that is a very deliberate choice.
Okay, that's interesting. So this really is one of those kinds of creatures that really inspired a lot of other... Well, inspired iconic characters such as Puck, who, of course, I know so well because I'm cool. But yeah, that's really cool to see that that's how this connects to those bigger stories like Shakespeare.
And the Pooka in general, it just seems to be kind of an animal spirit, so not only a donkey. It does say that he does have many shapes, so sometimes he's a horse, a bull, a goat, an eagle. Because he's a spirit, he can take any form, because he's not really from this world. And there are, I think, different stories about the Pooka, which again, we will link in the show notes, but it's not just one creature, it's more of like a type of creature, like a type of fairy or sprite.
And we're just talking about the one of Kildare for today. and that's what we're focusing on. But the Pooka is quite a fun spirit that we've encountered here. Trickster, although we've not seen any trickery yet, so maybe we will continue on to see where this goes. The following morning, there was a great hullabaloo when all the servants heard the scullery boy's tale. For the whole day, they could talk of nothing else but the Pooka and what had transpired. And I really also like to point out that I like that everyone just seems to accept the boy's story.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to dismiss kids' tales as like made up or just not real in some way. And in stories like this, it would usually spark a need for the kid to prove that it's real by gathering evidence, which can be a fun storyline, but because it's such a common thing to happen, I just get really excited when I see adults believing kids, and we can just skip that side quest and go to, okay, the kid was truth, we are all on the same page, how are we dealing with it?
What I do really like about some of the Celtic stories that we have, and even some of the Gaelic ones, some of the ones from Wales, some of the ones from Scotland and other places in Ireland that aren't, you know, Celtic mythology, but more fairy stories, is that when things go wrong, people are open to the idea that the fairies did it, or the fair folk did it, or that it was caused by some kind of supernatural force. So it does make the stories a lot more interesting in a way, because you don't see the part where everyone declines, then you have to go through the, you know, the side quest, as you said, of trying to figure out how to convince everybody. Everyone just kind of takes your word for it that, ah, yes, of course, this was the work of the fairies, or this was the work of this evil spirit, or this was the work of, if you're in Norway or in the Scandinavian regions, this was the work of Anissa.
Mm-hmm.
I just like it that instead of thinking of, you know, in Greek mythology, of the gods messing things up, you're like, ah, yes, of course, the many spirits around us have messed this up.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of saying, Zeus got me pregnant. That tracks.
Literally, I feel like if you were in ancient Greece, or like, you know, the parts of Greece that were in mythology, and you were a side character, you could just be like, yeah, this is Zeus's baby. 100%.
Yep. Don't worry about it.
I know he looks a lot like my serving boy, but don't look too much into it. This is the form Zeus took.
This is just what's decided. I'm sure he's going to be very important, so don't hurt my kid. Anyways, one lazy scullery girl chimes in and suggests that since the Pooka cleans everything anyways, why should they bother cleaning the kitchen at all? Everyone agreed with this sentiment. So that day, not a dish was cleaned, no broom touched the floor, and the kitchen remained in complete disarray. The following morning, the servants found the kitchen to be as clean as a whistle. The servants were relieved and thrilled, and they continued to enjoy this cleaning arrangement for a while. But sometime later, the boy, who had become quite bold from his adventure and forgot all his fear, declared that he would stay up that night and converse with the puka. So he sat by the fire where he could be seen and waited until late into the night. Eventually, the kitchen door flung open and the puka very casually walked in. The boy hesitated for a moment before he took a deep breath and greeted the puka. The puka nodded back towards him and returned his greeting. The boy politely asked the puka why he was so kind as to do half a day's cleaning for them each night. The puka explained that he was once a servant for the current master's father. However, he was the laziest individual and never worked, even though he was fed and clothed. So, when he passed away, he was punished to come back to this very manor to do all this labor every night and then sleep outside in the cold. Though he admitted that it wasn't too bad in the warmer months, but the winter months was very harsh, and he could hardly sleep when frigid winter storms came through the night. The boy felt so sorry for the poor puka and asked if there was anything he could do to help. The puka thought for a bit before saying that a good quilted coat would help it keep warm on long cold nights. It felt like a very reasonable ask, and the boy certainly didn't want to seem ungrateful. So the next night, the boy met with the puka again and presented it with a fine, warm horse's coat. They worked together to get the coat properly adjusted, and the puka was so delighted with the new coat that he walked up to some glass to see how it looked.
Aww.
After a minute, it said, "Well, I have a long journey ahead. I am very grateful to you and your fellow servants. Because of your kind gesture, I am happy at last. I wish you a good night." As it began to walk away, the boy cried out, "Wait, why are you leaving so soon? What about all the cleaning that must be done?" "Ah, yes," the puka said. "You must tell the other servants that it's their turn now. My punishment was only to last until I was thought to be worthy of a reward for the way I had done my duty. Now that I have received my reward, I will not be returning, and you will see me no more." And true to the puka's word, they never saw it again, and the servants had to go back to cleaning the kitchen themselves. And as they tirelessly cleaned each day, all they wished was that they hadn't been in such a hurry to reward that puka. And that is the story of the Kildare Puka.
Aww.
It's kind of a sad state of affairs, honestly.
It is. Honestly, it's not... I totally see why the puka had to clean everything and the punishment, you know, fits the nature of the crime, blah, blah, blah. But wouldn't you think that the puka would go out of its way to try and speak to someone or get acknowledged for what it was doing? Unless that was part of the rule as well.
Yeah, I think that was part of the rule, was that it just had to go in and clean and then had to stay outside. And I mean, I don't know how many people were taking care of it during the day. It also didn't want to spook people too much, like before it could get a reward. Also, if the people kind of fully understand what's going on, they would absolutely have never given him a reward. Let's be real.
Yeah.
But I found it really fun because this is one of those stories where I can absolutely see this story being told from the puka's perspective and being so completely different. Like, we had the story last year of Billy, who made that contract with the devil and everything. So we could have seen him before he died, like in his laziness, then his death, then facing the punishment, and then seeing him go through the motions of cleaning each time and then trying to find a way to get the reward and leave happily. And then he would have been like the hero. And in this case, because we heard it from like the servants and the boys' perspective, it's like, oh shoot, what did we do? We let go of the puka. You know, it's got a different ring to it. Anyways, I just found that really fun.
And I think this one is a lot less I guess, horrible than other Puka stories, because there are some Puka stories where it's quite mischievous and quite trickstery, but then there's other ones where the Puka is, you know, an actual bad creature. For example, they often target people who are travelers. Little boys and girls are warned not to eat overripe blackberries because it's a sign that a Puka had entered them. There's, you know, Puka that they look like big black looking wild creatures with chains on them. So it's very different from the Puka we have here. And I always think it's interesting to see how the Puka stories change across Europe and across Irish tales, even like within the stories that we have within the book itself. There's lots of different ones. So it's always cool to see why stories kind of use Pukas and why they change them. Mm-hmm. To me, it seems a lot like the Nissa. And I just love creatures that come into your house and help you clean. Although I would definitely be following the Puka around, making sure that everything was as clean as it should be. I'm one of those people, or I would clean before the Puka had to arrive. That's just me.
Oh, yeah, you, again, if you were the head maid of this, you would just see the Puka as, ah, okay, that's another set of hands I can rely on. Let me just spot check the work.
I'm sure the other servants weren't too pleased to lose their cleaning magical spirit.
Right? Especially because they were leaving some areas of the house in disarray. This just happened to be the one area that was like, no, I need to be clean. And frankly, if there's one area of the house I would want clean, it's the kitchen.
No, but it's one of those areas that people joke, but you clean your kitchen every day and it's still messy the next day. Like, it's just, there's something
right
so overstimulating about being in a kitchen and cooking and then cleaning and then looking around and it's still messy because, like, there's stuff on the floor, so now you have to wipe the floor. And then the next day, you have to do it again. It's just, the kitchen is the endless bane. Like, if there is one torturous act I could give to a person that hasn't done really anything wrong, they're just lazy or they're just, you know, kind of irritating, is that they would be stuck cleaning their kitchen on repeat.
I think most people are in that loop anyways. Like you said, most people need to clean their kitchen every day.
Yeah, well, if you ever want to curse someone, like mildly inconvenience them, it's, I hope your kitchen's never clean. No matter how much you clean it, there's always like a water spot somewhere, or there's always like some kind of markings on your kitchen cabinets. Or just as you finish cleaning it, you spill a bag of rice everywhere. That's the curse I would give.
I don't know if this is just because I've been playing a lot of Hogwarts Legacy recently, mm-hmm. but the Puka in this story really reminds me of Dobby and the house elves, and that it had to clean and it was kind of forced to help its master until it was given clothes and then it could be free. It could be a free Puka.
Oh, that's actually, I didn't make that connection at all, but yeah, that's, he got clothes and he was considered worthy and then master has freed the Puka.
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking of, and I didn't dive into it too much, but I had wondered if maybe the Puka, at least in this tale, had been some inspiration for the house elves in that world, the wizarding world of Harry Potter.
Mm. That'd be cool. I mean, in some depictions the Puka is like a little goblin that demands, you know, a share of the crop, and so when you do the harvest you leave a little bit left for the basically the little goblin creatures. So I mean, that could be a place where it came from.
Either way, I just, that's what my mind went to. Yeah. Anything else we want to talk about for the Puka and the story?
One place, if you do want to see the Puka in kind of modern stories or a modern retelling, is probably, once again, Hilda. I am a very big fan of Hilda. I love Hilda. It's, you know, it's fantastic. The animation is great. The comics are great. The characters are fantastic. And in the third season of Hilda, the Puka is a recurring character that shows up, and it kind of bothers Aunt Astrid by asking for random objects. If you want to see one of the fun adaptations of what a Puka could be, I definitely recommend Hilda, and I also just recommend Hilda in general because it is fantastic.
We really can't recommend that show enough.
Yeah, I mean, if you're listening to us, you definitely should watch Hilda because it's very in line with kind of the fairy tales and the whimsical elements. And it just feels like you're going into a fairy tale story, but in a modern setting, which is very hard to do, I think, because I generally hate when fairy tales get some kind of modern retelling, when it's too modern. Like, I can't stand when they have real, like, cell phones and stuff in a fantasy book. It just gives me the ick. But I think Hilda does a really good job of being modern, but also being able to incorporate kind of this fairy tale world within it, because it's just ingrained in kind of the way the story is told. So definitely, definitely, definitely always recommend Hilda. We probably will talk about Hilda in every episode if we could, because it's just everywhere.
It does cover a lot of fairy tales and folklore. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really cute, well done series, which I don't get to say a lot about Netflix shows these days. So,
yeah, I mean, fun. I was convinced that Hilda was over with season two, because it kind of felt done. And then I was very I was pleasantly surprised that after The Mountain King, the movie and The Mountain King.
Wait, there was like the third season after like the movie?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I didn't even register that when you said that. I just thought, oh yeah, the last season, the second season, and then you said third. I'm just now learning there's another season of Hilda.
No, there is. Okay. So over Christmas, my husband's brothers, my brother-in-law and his girlfriend came to stay with us, and they were like, oh, you guys want to watch the new season of Hilda with us? And me and my husband, we were just like, what do you mean the new season of Hilda? Because we kind of assumed, like everyone else, they did the two seasons and then The Mountain King was kind of it, right? So it felt very done. It felt like it was the end of not just the seasons, but it felt like it was the end of the entire series. And then they came out with season three, and it's a completely different vibe, I will say.
Really?
In that it's different in that there is a really big kind of underlying story that continues throughout. And the previous seasons of Hilda...
Okay, so it's no longer episodic.
Yeah, so the previous seasons of Hilda, I thought, were a bit more episodic, and they were a bit more... Not really episodic, because there are things that carry over, but they did have a feel of you could just dive in and watch any one of them with no prior knowledge and you would understand most things. But with this one, it was a bit darker, I found. There are a lot darker themes in it, but it was still very in line with the Hilda brand. But I quite enjoyed it because you saw a lot of character progression and you saw some new elements, specifically in terms of the land of the fae or the land of the wilds, and that kind of concept of going to a place that's completely different and being trapped there. And so I thought that season was fantastic. Again, it's really annoying because the end of the season, again, it felt like that was it. It felt like a series ending again. So I'm not sure if that's it. That's done. But yes, there is a third season of Hilda. I think you would really enjoy it. And for anyone who doesn't know that there is a third season of Hilda, this is your official PSA.
Okay, well, I know what I gotta get going on. But with that, dear travelers, that does bring us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you so much for joining us and celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
As always, travelers, if you want to see the show summary, notes, and the sources for the episode, please check those out on our website, www.talesmeenchantforest.com. We are also on most social media platforms, including TikTok, Instagram, Blue Sky, Mastodon, and X. Or if you are old school like Sparrow, you can email us at any time at talesmeenchantforest@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your questions, comments, and suggestions, so if you have anything to share, please don't hesitate. And remember, travelers, if you enjoyed what you heard today and what we do here, please give us a review on whatever platform you use to listen to the podcast. It helps the podcast grow and reach new travelers to join us on these adventures.
And remember, there's always a place for you in the Enchanted Forest.